And welcome to There Are Other Ways, conversations about living life a little differently. I'm Fiona Barrows, a brand strategist and storyteller for small creative businesses. Hello and welcome back. In today's episode, I'm chatting with photographer, blogger and podcaster Olivia Borsett. Olivia lives down in Cornwall and we had a really interesting conversation about how she's managed to turn what many would see as a negative, not living in London, the centre of fashion photography, into a real strength, targeting brands interested in the Cornish aesthetic. We also spoke about ambition and how people really don't think about you as much as you think they do. I find Olivia's tenacity and ambition really inspiring and I hope you enjoy this conversation. Hi Olivia.
Hi.
How are you?
I'm really good. How are you?
I'm good, thank you. How is it down in Falmouth?
It's raining really hard today, but I can't complain because we've had nothing but beautiful sun for like the whole month of May, so it's okay.
Yeah, I feel like it's kind of like our due. We had like two beautiful bank holidays of like pure sunshine, and so it's kind of like, yeah, well, you know, yeah, something's exactly. Got to give, I guess.
Yeah, and it hopefully makes us more productive.
Yes, me definitely. When it was really sunny, I wasn't getting a lot done.
No, me neither.
I was just like finding excuses to go outside all the time. I just couldn't stay inside. It was just too nice.
I know. I just want to constantly take my dog for walks, and he is the best excuse ever to get outside in the sunshine. I'm like, I just have to take him for another walk.
Yeah, he wants to go for a walk. He clearly just needs another walk.
He's so deprived.
Yeah, I know. I need to get a dog so I can use that as an excuse, I think.
Do it.
So thank you so much for agreeing to come on my podcast. I always like having other podcasters on because you've got your own podcast. So I think it's quite nice when you talk to each other. It's quite good.
Yeah, this is actually the first time I'm going on someone else's podcast though. So I'm quite excited.
Yeah, it's quite. My first one was Jen Carrington's.
Oh wow, what a first one to go on!
Well, exactly. But it is weird being the other side of the microphone.
Yeah,
like it's quite a good experience, I think, because it made me realize like what it's like for guests, I think.
Yeah, for sure. Yeah, this is actually good practice for me, definitely.
Yeah. Okay, good, cool. Okay, let's get started. Perhaps you wouldn't mind by introducing yourself, saying a little about who you are and what you do and how you are living life a little differently.
Sure. So my name is Olivia Borsett. I am a photographer living in Falmouth, which is in Cornwall, which for anyone who might not know is the very southwest of the UK. We're about 6 hours from London, so quite far away. I'm actually from Switzerland, so I moved here almost 8 years ago to study at the university, Falmouth University, and I never left. Yeah, so that's kind of a summary of me. I mainly shoot fashion work, and I work with brands from mainly around the UK, but also around the world to shoot their content, whether that be like social media content or adverts or lookbooks, stuff like that.
Fantastic. So how come you chose to study in the UK? How come you left Switzerland?
Well, I'm half British because I'm sure people will say, well, you don't sound like you're Swiss. So I'm actually half British and I'm half Swiss. So I speak English with my mum and French with my dad. But I went to an international school. And at school, pretty much everyone was going back to their home countries. So when it came to choosing universities, there were people like representatives coming from all around the world, and a guy came from Falmouth, and I wanted to study photography and I wanted to go and do art. And Switzerland has got amazing art schools, but there are very few, whereas it seemed that pretty much every single university in the UK offered some kind of art program. So I was very drawn to studying over here. And they're also like, in Switzerland, everything was very much like you do fine art. There was no, you can go and do fashion photography or you can go and do graphic design, or I couldn't find anything like that anyway. So that's basically why I came here.
And what is it about Falmouth that made you stay?
various things. I love it here. The town is beautiful. I absolutely adore living by the sea, which I think you can see that in a lot of my imagery. The sea features in a lot of the work that I do. I also met a boy. Yeah. So I met my boyfriend a few months before finishing, and he was a big pull to obviously wanting to stay. And another part was actually before I started going down the route of being a photographer, I actually used to run a fashion magazine called Atlas Magazine. And when I was finishing university, I was really lucky and granted some money from the sort of local government in Cornwall to get the sort of the magazine going. And that meant I had to live in Cornwall. So it was kind of a no-brainer, really. I was going to stay.
Yeah, no, of course. And I mean, there's definitely worse places to stay than Falmouth. It looks absolutely beautiful.
Yeah, exactly. It's a beautiful, beautiful place to live.
Yeah. So you have spoken and written quite a bit about this, I think, about choosing to live and build your business, your photography business in Cornwall. Even though you're a photographer and you're very interested in fashion photography, which is generally very London-centric, am I right?
Yes, very, very correct.
Okay. So how have you found that? has it made it harder for you, do you think?
Yeah, it's been harder, but I have been very determined to make it work, if that makes sense. Mm. So I've spent a lot of time researching business and reading about branding and putting myself out there. So I knew that I wanted to live in Falmouth. I knew I wanted to live in Cornwall. I don't like cities. I never have. I was brought up in the countryside, and the thought of giving up my life in a place that I love just so I can have a career in the career that I want felt really wrong. So I did struggle with that for a long time, and you know, that there was a voice in my head that said it was never going to be possible, and if you speak to anyone in the fashion industry, most people will tell you that you can't make a career in fashion photography or the fashion industry work unless you're in London. But I thought, well, there's got to be a way that I can make this work. And thankfully, we're really lucky to live in the age of the internet. So, and I've always been really interested in social media and in marketing. So I spent a lot of time researching what I could do. And it's all been through pitching myself. I spend a lot of time thinking about who my target market is, who my target audience is, and finding out the people that I need to speak to directly. So I spend a lot of time literally emailing who I want to work for. And a lot of the brands that I've worked with in the past are brands that kind of want that Cornish look about them anyway. So in what I do is approach them directly and say, hey, you know, normally you guys have to send a photographer down from London to Cornwall to shoot for you. I'm already here. Let's work together while I'm here. And it's worked really well so far.
Yeah, I mean, I just think that's a very clever and smart way round it, because you've built your own brand based on the kind of Cornish aesthetic and the Cornish look, and then use that to attract the brands that you want to work with.
Yeah, exactly.
So what I really like about that is you kind of turned something that could have been a negative into more of an advantage, I guess.
Yeah,
so
you've
kind of
the
turned
idea.
It negative. Yeah, and is that kind of emailing? Is that your like almost cold emailing? Is that kind of like a big thing that you do in order to get clients?
Yeah, it is. So I started doing this about a year and a half ago. I'd spent about a year and a half thinking that I was going to do wedding photography, because the Cornish county has a very big wedding centric industry. Mm. There's a lot of weddings down here. It's a beautiful place to get married, and there are a lot of wedding photographers. So the sort of the natural way of going about things, if you're a photographer, is I'm going to be a wedding photographer. So I did that. I went down that route, and within my first wedding realized that that was definitely not what I wanted to do. I just walked in there and thought, why am I here? Like, this is not creative enough for me. This is not fulfilling what I want to do. And I've my entire life been drawn to images in Vogue, images in, you know, all the fashion campaigns. I just love that. I studied fashion photography. I did 3 years in it. So going down a wedding photography route just felt really wrong. So I left that first wedding and, you know, I committed to doing the ones I'd already booked and they were all lovely. It just wasn't what I wanted to do. And I left that first wedding and had sort of a 2 weeks where I felt really low and I didn't know what to do. And I felt like I'd spent a year wasted of marketing myself as a wedding photographer. I thought everyone was going to think I was crazy because I didn't want to do it. And like, how the hell was I going to make money if I wasn't doing weddings? But I had previously been in touch with Jules, the sort of, you know, country lifestyle brand. And we'd done one or two images together. And I sat down and I was just talking to my friend on Facebook Messenger. And I just said, I'm going to email Jules and just see if they want to do some images, like images with me. So I put a whole pitch together. I put a mood board together and I just emailed the contact I had and said, I've got this idea. I want to shoot for you down on the beach in Cornwall this summer. Just send me a few of your bits and I'll shoot it for you. And I offered to do it for free. And within 5 minutes they replied and said, yeah, let's do it. What do you want? We'll send you the whole package down. So
brilliant.
And it was just this like, oh my God, why am I not doing this more? I made it my mission to do that. And I, you know, I've been doing the same thing probably every day ever since.
Just emailing contacts and, you know, that you want to work with.
Yeah, so emailing people, finding people. I spend a lot of time on LinkedIn or looking through credits on magazines or stalking people on Instagram to find out who's working for which brand so that I can then have a name and directly email them, putting pitches together, putting ideas together. And yeah, that's what I do.
I mean, it makes me feel very nervous just like hearing you say that because it's totally the opposite way to how I do it, I guess. Mm-hmm. But I can see, I have so much like respect for you for doing that because it totally makes sense and sounds, you know, and obviously it's really working for you. Do you have to psych yourself up to kind of get into that frame of mind or does it just kind of...
I don't, because the thing is that I've never had anyone come back to me and say, we don't want to work with you. The only response I ever get is a yes. And that's not to say that everyone replies saying yes, but just they don't reply if they don't want to work with me. I just don't get an answer. So I never get hit back with a negative response. The only responses I ever get are someone saying, sure, yeah, let's do this. Or maybe occasionally it's, we can't do something right now, but we'd love to work with you in the future. So I know that no matter what I do, it's going to be a positive. There's no bad thing in putting yourself out there. No matter what you do, it's going to work well for you. No one's ever going to read a pitch email and go, oh, well, she's an idiot. they're either going to have no response. They're either going to have no reaction to it or they're going to think it's great and they're going to get back to you.
Yeah, but that's the thing is I think in my head, I think in a lot of people's head, it would be that people would read it and go, oh, you're an idiot. But you're right, they wouldn't, because either it's right and they will say yes or it's not right and they'll just kind of shrug it off and won't pay attention to it.
Yeah, exactly. And they'll never sit there and think of you that as a negative person or think of you badly. They'll just, it doesn't even occur to them. And I try hard to put myself in other people's shoes. So, you know, when I get an email, and I think I might have an advantage of that I spent 5 years being the editor of a magazine, but I never once, when I received an email from someone that wasn't suited to the magazine, think, well, they're an idiot for sending this to me. I just think this isn't right and that's it. And that we'd move on. And I never thought negatively about them. It was never something personal. So putting myself in that situation, I know that if someone gets an email from me and maybe I'm not experienced enough, or maybe my portfolio isn't quite right, or maybe they're already working with someone, they're not going to think of me as a bad person.
No, absolutely. And something that I really, again, another thing that I really like and admire you and that I see, because you talk quite a lot about your ambitions online, I think. Like, I think I've seen it. You mention stuff that you really want to achieve in your Instagram stories. And you've also written a blog post about like 5 things that you really want to achieve in your career. And I just think it's your, I just think it's really great that you're very upfront about your ambitions and you're very kind of openly ambitious. Is that something that you like, is that something that you like consciously do, or is it just, is that just kind of how it?
Yeah, I don't know. That's an honest question. I'm not sure. I think maybe it's just, it's developed. And I think as I've gotten, you know, I hate saying the word successful because I don't feel successful. I don't think anyone who works themselves ever actually feels fulfilled or feels successful. But the more I've been doing this, the longer, the more confident I feel, the more I feel like I can reach for my sort of higher goals. Because I definitely know that a year and a half ago, I was playing things quite small still. I was sort of hanging back and thinking, well, actually, I'm not going to aim to work for really big brands one day because I'm too scared and I'm not going to ever be good enough. But the longer I've done this, the long, and I, you know, I've only been doing it a little while, so God knows what I'm going to be aiming for soon. But but you know, like it gets easier and you can start being like, okay, well, I've been doing this for a little while. I know how a camera works. I know that the work that I take is good. I know that the photos I take get a good response. So let's aim a little higher. And I think it's building up on it slowly. Like I'm not saying that I want to shoot for Vogue tomorrow. That might be a goal that I have, you know, 20 years from now, but I've got that kind of that small goal in my head, and every day I kind of work one step towards that, if that makes sense.
It does. It does. I think sometimes I get a little scared about articulating my like higher goals because I worry about not achieving them. Mm-hmm. And almost in sometimes I feel like I don't always want to admit them to myself because then it's that kind of thing of, well, what if I don't achieve them? And I think it takes a lot of bravery to kind of put your goals out there and say, this is what I'm working towards, this is what I want.
Yeah. I think for me it's almost a bit of like, put it out there and then it's gonna happen. Like I don't know how, I don't know why, I don't know when, but it doesn't matter. I also, like, going back to, you know, people aren't going to be thinking about us. I think I personally used to spend a lot of time thinking that people thought about me a lot, but the reality is that if I put my big goals out there, someone's not going to be sort of checking back in 5 years' time going, oh, Olivia, you haven't hit your goal. You haven't shot for Vogue yet. Like, what are you doing? It's going to be like that.
I think we all think that people think about us a lot more than they do.
Yeah.
Like, I think it's very easy to think that people are thinking about you a lot more. And the truth is they're not. They're thinking about themselves.
Yeah, no one cares about what anyone else is doing. We're so focused on ourselves. And I think that the more we can remember that people aren't worrying about what you're doing, they're worrying about what they're doing and how you can, like, how they themselves can further themselves, then it makes life a lot easier.
Absolutely. And I think it also comes back to, I think it's also very interesting with sort of what you said at the beginning about living in Cornwall. And I think there is this kind of idea that if you don't live, that kind of like ambition is something that you kind of can only have if you live in the city and you go along with that lifestyle. Like, and I think it's kind of expected of you if you do that. But then to kind of be like, well, I don't want that lifestyle. I don't want to live in a big city. I don't want that high pressure, but I still want to achieve stuff. Like, I think that's really great as well.
Yeah, that's something that I stand by 100%. And I am, it's hard. And there are definitely days where I think, oh my God, what am I doing? Like, I should have, all my friends, I'm the only one that stayed down here after university. Like, they've all gone off and got big jobs at either, you know, production companies or in magazines, or they're shooting for, you know, big clients up there. And yeah, there are days when I feel really jealous. The main thing that's hard down here is the lack of professional models. I spend a lot of time finding girls myself, and I'm really fortunate that I found a huge array of amazing models down here, but it takes a lot of work. And something I'm working on, you know, improving on is actually working with higher standard models. But one of the sacrifices I have to make here is that I can't sit back and just assume that because I'm living in Cornwall doesn't mean I have to travel. One of my next, you know, phases of my career, if that makes sense, is to actually go up to London a little bit more. But you know, we're talking just going for 4 days here and there to show my face, because the reality is that is where the industry is, and I have to be present where the industry is a little bit. So it's kind of like working out how to make what you want to work in the long run as well.
Yeah, exactly. And I guess I think that's really interesting that you can kind of build away from it, but then you still, you know, you still come in and you touch base, and but then you're still going back to the life and the lifestyle that you really want, rather than just kind of like staying there and being, you know, having to be there all the time.
Exactly. And like the reality is that I shoot the stuff, the work that I create is very much location focused. So I take models out on, you know, to a beautiful location. The location is actually tends to be what inspires my images. So if I lived in London, I would be completely uninspired, and I'd have to find myself constantly traveling somewhere, which would cost the brands or myself a fortune. So I might as well just live here and work from here.
Yeah, you'd be going down to the coast all the time anyway. Yeah. But then, and then you would have like the worst of both worlds rather than the best of both worlds.
Yeah. And then, you know, living costs down here are slightly cheaper. So, you know, weigh the pros and the cons. Yes, I might make a little bit less than someone living up in London, but there are far fewer photographers down here. There is much less competition going around. I'm already here to shoot with these brands. So, yeah.
So you mentioned that you had friends who left Falmouth and went up to London. Did you feel a real pull to do that? And did you feel any sort of pressure to do that as well, to kind of take the more traditional route?
Well, the reality is I was never actually meant to stay in the UK. So I was actually meant to move back to Switzerland. That was always the plan. That was, you know, I was going to do my 4 years in the UK at uni, and then I was going to go home and get a job, you know, in an office in Switzerland and probably marry some banker or something. That was going to be the plan. But as you do, yes. But I didn't want to do that. And I actually did leave. This is a funny, and I have written about this on my blog, but when I was in my very last few months of university, I started applying for internships in Geneva, because that was what I was supposed to do, because I come from a very academic background, and, you know, my dad works in a corporate job and he does very well. And that was what you did. And I started doing that, got accepted to an internship. It was, you know, a huge opportunity. I beat like 500 people to this job. It was in social media management for a luxury company. And I took it and I moved home. I had my entire life shipped back to Switzerland, and I quit after 3 days. And I was supposed to be there for 6 months. So, you know.
And what did you do? Did you go straight back to Falmouth, or did you?
Yeah.
So the boat just turned around and went back again with all your stuff.
sadly not. So basically I got in there and I realized very quickly that I was not happy. I did not want to be doing that. And, you know, I had this, obviously, this new boyfriend in Falmouth. I'd basically turned down the grant money to run my magazine on because I'd already accepted this internship. So I went home to my parents and just burst into tears and said, I've made a horrible mistake. I don't want to do this. I love being in Falmouth. I want to go live in Falmouth. I want to run my magazine and start my magazine and try and get it, you know, to print and everything. And bless them, they are the most amazing parents in the world, because they just said, just go back. So I was really lucky. And the worst conversation of my life, I think, was going into that office on the fourth day I was supposed to be in there and say, by the way, I'm gonna leave, you know. And that was it was fine, it doesn't matter, it's done, and I don't have any regret, because the best thing I ever did was do that and come back here. Because if I had stuck to that, I probably wouldn't be where I am right now. I probably would be working in an office job feeling pretty miserable that I gave up on so much.
But I think also there's something good about the fact that you did go back to Switzerland, even for that short amount of time, because it probably made you a lot more certain that what you wanted was back in Falmouth. Like, yeah, I think sometimes you have to experience what you don't want in order to know what it is that you do want.
Yeah,
and I think 100%. Getting a taste of that, like, corporate life, I'm guessing, makes you... I mean, I know that was kind of what London was for me. It was... And I mean, I was there for 6 years, so it's not quite the same, but it's that, you know, you need to know what you don't want in order to know what you do want sometimes, I think.
Yeah, 100%. I've done, you know, stints in London where I spent a month and a half working at Condé Nast Traveller magazine, and it was great and I loved it, but I also just knew very quickly that I didn't want to work in an office. I didn't want to sit on an underground train. I didn't want to not see the light of day. You know, I wanted to be out and able to run my own time and my own schedule. And I wanted to shoot and be creative and, yeah, live a much more relaxed lifestyle than being in a city.
Yeah, I want to talk to you a bit more about your lifestyle in just a sec. But there's just one thing that I've been thinking about quite a bit recently. And I don't know whether it's like, I pick up on it sometimes in like TV shows and films. It's kind of like idea, and I think it's quite an American thing, but this idea of kind of like small town life. Like, it's always like that's something to kind of, the small towns are the places where you have to get away from. And it comes back to what I was saying to you earlier about like ambition, is that it's kind of seen as like you can only have that if you live in the city. And I think it's, there's something really, I don't know, like I think actively choosing where you live and choosing to live in a smaller town in the countryside and lead a more relaxed life. I don't quite know where I'm going with this, but I think it's really interesting that that's how it's always depicted in the media. Yeah, but that it can, I think you are proof that the two don't have to kind of come together.
Yeah, 100%. And I think that we are really lucky that we do live in the age of the internet. Like, we are having a conversation right now through the internet. We know each other because of the internet, and all the work, and I say pretty much all of it, not 100% of it, but most of it has come from the fact that I have put myself out there online. I don't think I could be doing this 25 years ago. If I wanted to be successful in what I'm doing right now 25 years ago, I definitely would have had to live in London. But we're so lucky that we can reach out and talk to people all around the world through the internet. So I'm going to use it to my advantage. Like, I am going to sit here and work my bum off, which I do, you know, work really hard to get in front of everyone that I want to work with, and constantly thinking about what else I can be doing to improve my career. But yeah, use the tools we've got and live where we want to live so that we can, I mean, there's so many nomads, aren't there, now, that just sort of travel around the world and do their job from their laptop. Like, that's amazing. So I'm doing a similar sort of thing, but from a country town in the UK.
Yeah, I mean, I was sort of a digital nomad for a while. I mean, not fully. The only thing I always caveat that with is that the percentage of people doing that who are actually making a proper living and not relying on savings from somewhere is actually quite small, and much smaller than I think sometimes gets made out. Like, I think I think when you're like traveling constantly, it is very hard to run a business. I think that's why there's kind of like, there's become more like nomadic, like places like where I live, like Ubud in Bali, and then also like on the Thai Islands and places like that, where people do kind of like settle down for a while.
I can't imagine doing that personally.
I just found it like, it just took energy away from what I wanted to actually be doing with my time. Was how I kind of end up feeling. And that I'm really pleased I did it, but a big part of me coming back to the UK was saying I want to fully focus on my work and on my business and on my career, and not put energy into, you know, traveling and doing other stuff.
I can understand that.
We've spoken a little bit about your lifestyle. And so I just kind of wondered whether you could talk a bit about that and how you kind of balance and how you make the most of living in Cornwall while also, you know, working very hard, as you say.
Okay. So let me think. I am very lucky. I live in the middle of town in Falmouth, which is a beautiful little town. It's very, you know, seasidey, quintessential English postcard kind of town. And I am very passionate about living a balanced life between work and, you know, leisure, play, lifestyle, whatever you want to call it. I struggled with health problems pretty much for the past, you know, 10, 15 years. So living with these health problems means that I need to have a very calm life, stress-free as possible. And that was very big in my decision to wanting to work for myself and run my own schedule. So being down here is half the, you know, I'm winning half the battle basically just by living down here. I absolutely love the sea. I grew up in a landlocked country, funny enough, but we have big lakes. So I've always been around water and I'm really drawn to water. Don't know if you're into astrology, but my moon sign is Cancer and so is my rising sign is Cancer. So I'm very drawn to the water. So I spend pretty much at least an hour a day somewhere near the sea or some kind of water. I'm very lucky that I have a little dog now. We got him in September last year and he is very energetic and he needs lots of walks. So I kind of use him and since getting him, he's made my lifestyle even more balanced because he needs to go out for, you know, an hour to 2 hours a day. And if it's sunny, we definitely go out for longer than that and make the most of it. But I try to balance my day quite evenly between looking after myself and doing something that's nice and working. I'm lucky that I love my work. So sometimes there are days when I want to work more than I want to, you know, go out and enjoy the sunshine or something if I'm feeling really into the zone of working. But I just try to be conscious about how I'm feeling, really tune into how I'm feeling in myself. And if I'm feeling really tired or if I'm feeling really unmotivated, there is something going on. And that means I need to like recalibrate in some way. And I don't always know how to do that, but most days it is just to get outside, get out the house or do something just completely different from work. So I've gotten quite good at listening to my intuition and figuring out what I need to do. That's kind of my lifestyle.
One of the most important things about working for yourself is being able to tune into that intuition, because you don't have the structure and you don't have the kind of rigidity of working for a company and having a boss and someone telling you what to do. And it's something that I've, like the last few months, I've also really tried to tune into and to work with rather than against. Because I think that like when I was working in a 9-to-5, there's not really any room for that. Like you kind of just have to show up and put your bum on the seat and you have to do the work that you're meant to do. But I've kind of been trying to learn to, you know, when I'm really feeling work and when I'm really in the zone, to going with it. And then when I'm not, to kind of, you know, asking myself why and pulling back and doing something that will kind of fill me up so that I get back to that stage quicker. Rather than just kind of pushing on mindlessly.
Yeah, and I've had to really challenge myself to come out of this mindset that I have to work 8 hours a day. When I first sort of started working for myself, and you know, I count the 2 years I was running the magazine as working for myself as well, but I was still working part-time for a company, but I was mainly working for myself, and I've been working for myself fully for 2.5 years. And at first I really was like, right, okay, it's 9 a.m. I'm going to sit here until 12 and then I'm going to go have lunch and then I'm going to come back to my desk at 1 and I'm going to work till 4:30 whenever my boyfriend gets home, and then I will switch off. And the longer I've been doing this, the longer I've realized that those hours do not work for me. I am not productive past the hour of about 2 o'clock. But I'm super productive. Like I will get pretty much everything on my to-do list done between the hour of 7:30 and 10:30.
It's so weird you say that. I'm exactly the same. Those are the hours that I work as well. Yes. I'm so productive first thing in the morning.
Yeah. So I get everything done. And I mean, like pretty much everything important gets done in those hours. And there's a book I need to read and I can't remember the title. I heard about it the other day in a podcast, but it is about sort of having, I think it was called like being a time planning ninja or something like that. And how we've got 3 different kind of stages, and like there's a super, super productive mode, and then there's a sort of a semi-productive mode, and then there's a really non-productive mode.
Yeah. And I remember reading something about this, I think either online or in a magazine. I think I've heard of the same idea. Yeah,
I don't really. It was really a passing thing I heard on a podcast, so I don't remember the terms or anything. But it really resonated with me because I was like, yes, I know my ones, I know my time spans, and so I try to make sure that I have every morning between those hours really free to work. Thankfully, my dog is lovely and he likes to sleep all morning, which is great. So I get all my work done then, and then I will tend to work quite well until about 2 o'clock. But there are some days when I really just don't. And I actually sometimes have a little bit mini second wind between sort of like 5 and 6. So yeah, it's I'm flexible now with the way I work. And obviously on photo shoot days, you know, it's completely different. I'm tend to be out of the house all day and shoot all day, and that's absolutely fine. But when I'm, you know, when I'm talking about being at my desk, which is, you know, 85% of being a photographer is actually being at your desk. I work when suits me, and I am more productive in those hours. So, and I've always said this to people that I think work, you know, in offices, and I don't think it probably is to everyone, but, you know, are people actually productive that whole time that they're at desk? Like, are they actually working at their best?
No, so they're looking at the email website.
Yeah, so it's just, I find it that if we can work to when suits us best, we're winning. So I have the luxury of being able to do that, and I know that not everyone does, and that is really difficult, but I work best, you know, in the morning, and I make sure that I get all my work done, and I'm very motivated in the morning, so most of the time the good stuff happens then and when it needs to. And I leave the afternoon for, you know, maybe editing, because editing is a little bit less brain powerful, and I don't need as much of my brain power to actually edit an image. I'll do research, or maybe if I'm doing a course of some kind, I'll do that in the afternoon, which is all still, you know, related to my business. It's still productive, but it's not something I really need to use all my brain for.
Yeah, I'm exactly, it's so weird how similar we are in this. I'm exactly the same, that I use that like 3 hour block first thing in the morning to do all my super creative deep work. So if I'm writing clients' copy, or I write my own blog post in that time, my newsletter, or anything that sort of I need full concentration, I do in that bit. And then I go to a co-working space in the afternoons, unless I'm recording podcast episodes. And there it's not as quiet, but I kind of use the energy of other people there. So then I do a lot more like replying to emails, editing the podcast, making edits on copy that I've already written, all that sort of sending invoices and proposals and all of that sort of stuff. And I find that that works really well for me. Kind of separating them out.
I think it really is just about tuning into ourselves and figuring out what works best for us, and you know, trying to drown out the feeling that, oh, should I be working? It's like 3 o'clock and I'm not really doing anything. I'm hoovering the house. Should I be working? Actually, no. If you can tune in and just sort of block out what you think everyone else says you should be doing, and just go with what works for you, you'll never have a problem.
Yeah. So you wrote a blog post recently about your changing relationship with money that I thought was really, really interesting. So I just wonder whether you could talk a little bit about that and what's been going on there.
Yeah. So I have something called dyscalculia, which is very similar to dyslexia. It's just dyslexia with numbers, basically. And I think a lot more people have it than they realize. But I was lucky. I was diagnosed with that when I was 16. And I'd struggled with maths, you know, my whole life. I found it really difficult. Horrendous memories of being in math class and just everyone around me understanding and me going, I have no idea what they're talking about. So found it really hard and kind of put myself in this box of, I'm never going to be able to do numbers. So I found that quite tricky, and I don't know what happened, but some point in the last 9 months, I'd say, I kind of got annoyed at myself for thinking that way, for putting myself in this box of, I just can't do numbers. So I read the book, You Are a Badass at Making Money. I'd read Jen Sincero's first one, You Are a Badass, and that was like life-changing. I loved that book. And I'd actually bought You Are a Badass at Making Money at the same time, but I didn't read it for almost a year. And it was on my nightstand. And I remember going to bed every night and thinking, I'm going to read that book. But just for some reason, I just couldn't do it. I just couldn't pick it up. And something happened at the start of this year. I was like, right, okay, I need to get on top of numbers and money. And I have always had this just severe, just like a mindset that I cannot do it.
Mm.
And I knew that with that mindset of like, if I can't do it, then I was never going to make enough money to survive the way that I want to. So I started to read the book and I actually read it and I, you know, made my way through it. And suddenly I was like, why have I not done this before? Because thinking back to the history of how I've gotten to where I am, I know everything because I've immersed myself in, you know, marketing books, branding books, photography. Everything I've ever learned has been just because I've taken an interest in it. So I told myself, well, what if I take an interest in money?
Mm.
And I really have. I read that book and I went through all the exercises. At the end of every chapter, there's like a little exercise, and I did every single one. And then I was like, right, okay, I finished that one. What can I read next? And I kind of do this where I really just go nuts with books and reading books about a topic. And I started listening to podcasts about money and just reading blog posts about money, trying to just find ways that I could educate myself, because it struck me that I might not actually be as bad at numbers and like finance as I think I am. I just don't know a lot. And I love that saying that you don't know what you don't know.
Mm-hmm.
And suddenly the next podcast I listened to was one of the Being Boss podcasts about the Profit First method. They interviewed the author, and that sounded really interesting. So I bought his book and I read that book. And I, you know, I've talked about this on my Instagram as well, that I found that book quite boring to read, but the concept made finances seem really easy. So I followed the method, and then I bought another book, and I ended up not fully reading that book, but passed it on to my boyfriend. I was like, this is a better book for you, so read this. And now I'm actually reading a book called The Science of Making Money, which is by a man called Walter D. Wattles or something. Over 100 years. It's over 100 years old. It's really, really old. And it was like £3. It was dirt cheap. But I'm trying very hard to shift my mindset and to think as money as a positive thing, to think of money as not as a scary thing, but just something that is another part of my business. And that sounds so obvious because it is just another part of my business. But for a very long time, I literally just pushed it to one side, did the bare minimum. I had an accountant. They did all my stuff for me. I knew I had to make money, but I just never really spent a lot of time trying very hard to learn how I was going to progress it. So that's kind of what I'm doing right now. I'm just educating myself, immersing myself in things about money so that I can keep learning and improving.
Mm. I mean, I just think that's great, because I don't have the same issue with numbers exactly, but I think I have always kind of told myself, oh, I'm not very good with money. Like, oh, it's not very good. And I think up until the beginning of this year, I didn't really have a real handle on my finances. Like, I didn't know the numbers.
God, me neither.
Yeah. And you know, I couldn't even have told you how much the standing orders going out of my business account were. Like, I didn't know what they were. There was stuff that I wasn't using on there. And at the beginning of this year, I sat down and I did a massive Airtable spreadsheet. And I was like, right, if I'm going to make this work, I need to know exactly how much money I need to make per month to, and I've got like three levels. So I've got like, you know, like basic, and then like where I want to be by the end of this year, and then where I want to be by the end of next year, sort of thing. But breaking it down and working out exactly what is coming in, what is going out, it also stops it being so scary, I think. Because I think there's always that, and I'm as guilty of this as anyone, of not checking my bank balance when I know I need to, because I'm worried about what I'm going to find there. But it's always worse in your head than it is actually, I think.
Yeah.
I mean, sometimes it has been worse.
I used to do the same thing, like just not checking my bank balance. But I found that in educating myself and sort of putting systems in place, the Profit First method that I talked about earlier is really good, because you kind of separate everything into categories, and I automatically can now see what I have to spend on my business, like expenses wise. There's only a certain amount of money in there because I've separated everything into little accounts. Like, I have an expenses pot where everything that I can use for spending goes out of. And then I've now made a little savings account for my tax. I've got a little profit account, and then I've got a little sort of owner's pay account, which is what I pay myself with. And every time money comes in, I separate it into percentages, and they all go in those different pots. So it makes actually checking your bank balance not so scary, because you have to always be in the act of doing it. And I think the more that you check things and the more that you are aware of what's in, the more power you have.
It's paying attention to it. And there's that old saying that, and I think Jen talks about this in her book, You're a Badass, about how money is just energy. Like, it's just it's a transactional thing. And if you pay attention to it, you're sort of putting your energy in with it, if that makes sense. I'm sure she explains it better. But, you know, you can't, something can't grow if you're not paying attention to it, basically.
That similar thing, I actually, about a year ago now, because I was in therapy for about a year, and my therapist, one day I handed over the money, the cash for our session, and she said, I like to think of money as an exchange of energy. And it completely shifted my mindset, because she said, you know, I have just spent an hour with you, we've been talking about some, you know, some stuff that's pretty heavy, I've given you my energy, and now you're giving me money to repay me for that energy that I've given you. And I was like, oh my God, life changed. Because now I can think to myself, okay, you know, because the thing is, I love what I do. And to me, taking a picture is quite easy. It feels really easy. It just feels natural because I've done it for so long. So it felt almost like silly that I was asking people to pay me, because it's so easy to me. And then actually, when I think about it as energy, and you know how much energy I'm putting into it, when I think about how tired I am when I come back from a shoot, I know that I've put my all into that. So having someone repay me for the energy that I've expended is just completely like natural.
I think I went through a similar process when it came to sort of like moving from sort of like freelance writing, so like writing for hire, just basically just doing whatever anyone wanted me to do, to putting together a proper website copywriting and content creation packages, and thinking about that in terms of energy actually really helped me to price them, I think, and price them at a level that I feel really happy with. Because I think that when you, and I really wanted to get away from kind of like, when I first started, I based everything roughly on an hourly wage. I'd work out in my head roughly how much time it would take. And then that would kind of be how much I would charge. But I'd always end up undercharging, because I would never, I'd always put more time into it than I think I would. And also, I wouldn't count the time that I'd be thinking about it outside of the time I'm on my laptop. You know, when I'm working with a client, I'm thinking about their website and their brand while I'm making my lunch and while I'm like doing other stuff. So it's, I think when you put it into that, I think that's a really good way of looking at it.
Yeah, totally. And like, I'm going to be completely honest here. Like, this is why I'm doing all this work around this, is because I still believe that I am undercharging for what I'm doing. It's something that I find really difficult. I'm not 100% there yet with, you know, the whole money thing, the financing, the numbers thing, which is why I have to spend a lot of time immersing myself to get to that point where I feel really confident, where I feel really comfortable, so that I can start, you know, creating the business that I really, really want to create. And I know it's just there, but I just need to spend a little bit more time making it perfect.
And just a bit more time, like, learning and educating. Like, I always come back to this, that it's always a process, and that, you know, no one goes into a business, starts a business knowing how to do everything and getting everything right. But you just kind of have to, like, put stuff out there, start working yourself, seeing what you need to work on, diving into those areas, tweaking, you know, trying stuff, does this work, does this not work, and then just keep keep educating yourself, like you said.
Completely. Yeah, like my blog started off as a food
really
blog. if I hadn't started something, because I just wanted something to do, I wanted to be creative, I wanted to take pictures again, so I started taking pictures of food, and for about 6 months I wrote a food blog. That has completely changed now. Like, what a shift. You know, so I think that if anyone takes anything from this, it's just start doing something, because you can pivot so much.
Yeah, I think that held me back for a long time, actually, because I also started with a food blog as well in London. And then that kind of turned into a travel blog. And I actually, when I started doing freelance work, I set up a separate website and blog for that. And part of me wonders why I didn't just pivot what I already had. But I think I just kind of wanted that feeling of a fresh start. But if I hadn't done all of that work, then I never would have got to where I am now, if that makes sense.
Yeah, exactly. There's nothing is ever time wasted, I don't think.
So what has been the hardest thing for you about living life a little differently?
Self-doubt, you know, self-doubt comes in and, you know, I'm doing things very, very differently to my industry. So having people who you really respect, you know, going on a course or going on a workshop or watching something, a YouTube video, and them saying, you know, it's impossible to do it unless you do it this way. And you're sitting there thinking, I'm really doing it very differently. And you know, wondering if that's going to work out. I think that's been very hard, but very rewarding when you can see it starts to work as well.
Yeah, I can see that. And what's been the best thing for you about living life a little differently?
Oh, just getting to do what I love and in a place I love, surrounded by, you know, people I love, and being in such an inspiring place. I mean, it totally outweighs the con of feeling, you know, like I'm doing things maybe a bit differently and like it might take a little longer, but it's amazing to be able to do the work that I do in such a beautiful place and continue to do it for a lot longer, I hope.
That sounds amazing. Olivia, thank you so much for talking to me today. I've really, really enjoyed our conversation. I'm really hoping that we get to meet in person at some point in the future as well when I come down to Falmouth.
Yeah, I hope so too. Thank you so much for having me. I will definitely be giving you a full tour of the town when you come.
Thank you so much for listening. Two more things. I'd absolutely love it if you could rate, review and subscribe to this podcast if you're enjoying listening to it. It really does help put it in front of other people who might like it. And secondly, please do also subscribe to my newsletter, Letter and Notes. I send it every Monday morning and it includes a short essay from me about my own experience in living life a little differently and in running a thoughtful and creative business. You can subscribe and also find out more about the work that I do, helping creative business owners share their brand story online on my website, www.fionabarrows.com. Until next time.